Chapter 12. A day later, on June 23rd, a big white Connie was roaring north on US 180 in another part of the country. It was doing somewhere between 90 and 100, its Corinthian white paint job glittering in the sun, the chrome winking. The opera windows in the rear also gave back the sun, heliographing it viciously. The trail that Connie had left behind was wandering and pretty much senseless. Up 81 to US 80, the turnpike, until Polk and Lloyd began to feel nervous. They had killed 6 people in the last 6 days, including the owner of the Continental, his wife, and his daughter. But it was not the 6 murders that made them feel antsy about being on the interstate. It was the dope and the guns. 5 grams of hash, a little tin snuff box filled with God knew how much coke, and 16 pounds of marijuana. Also, 2.38s, 3.45s, a 357 mag that Polk called his pokerizer, 6 shotguns, 2 of them sawed-off pumps, and a Schmeisser submachine gun. Murder was a trifle beyond their intellectual reach, but they both understood the trouble they were going to be in if the Arizona State Police picked them up in a stolen car full of blow and shooting irons. On top of everything else, they were interstate fugitives, had been ever since they crossed the Nevada border. Interstate fugitives. Lloyd Henry liked the sound of that. Gangbusters. Take that, you dirty rats. Have a lead sandwich, you lousy copper. So they had turned north at Deming, now on 180, had gone through Hurley and Bayard and the slightly larger town of Silver City, where Lloyd had bought a bag of burgers and 8 milkshakes. Why in the name of Christ had he bought 8 of the motherfuckers? They would soon be pissing chocolate. Grinning at the waitress in an empty yet hilarious way that made her nervous for hours afterward. "I believe that man would just as soon have killed me as looked at me," she told her boss that afternoon. Past Silver City and roaring through Cliff, the road now bending west again, just the direction they didn't want to go in. Through Buckhorn, and then they were back in the country God forgot, 2-lane blacktop running through sagebrush and sand, buttes and mesas in the background, made you want to puke. "We're getting low on gas," Polk said. "Wouldn't be if you didn't drive so fucking fast," Lloyd said. He took a sip of his 3rd milkshake, gagged on it, powered down the window, and threw out all the leftover crap, including the 3 milkshakes neither of them had touched. "Whoop, whoop," Polk cried. He began to goose the gas pedal. The Connie lurched forward, dropped back, lurched forward. "Ride 'em, cowboy," Lloyd yelled. "Whoop, whoop. You want smoke?" "Smoke 'em if you got 'em," Polk said. "Whoop, whoop." There was a large green hefty bag on the floor between Lloyd's feet. It was holding 16 pounds of marijuana. He reached in, got a handful, and began to roll up a bomber joint. "Whoop, whoop." The Connie cruised back and forth over the white line. "Cut the shit," Lloyd shouted. "I'm spilling it everywhere." "Plenty more where that came from. Whoop! Come on, man, we gotta sell this stuff, man. We gotta deal this stuff or we gonna get caught and wind up in somebody's trunk." "Okay, sport." Polk began to drive smoothly again, but his expression was sulky. "It was your idea, your fucking idea. You thought it was a good idea." "Yeah, and I didn't know we'd end up driving all over fucking Arizona either. How are we ever gonna get to New York this way?" "We're throwing off pursuit, man," Lloyd said. In his mind, he saw police garage doors opening and thousands of 1940s radio cars issuing forth into the night, spotlights crawling over brick walls. "Come on out, Canarsie. We know you're in there." "Good fucking luck," Polk said, still sulking. "We're doing a hell of a job. You know what we got besides that dope and the guns? We got 16 bucks and 300 fucking credit cards we don't dare use. What the fuck? We don't even have enough cash to fill this hog's gas tank." "God will provide," Lloyd said, and spit-sealed the bomber. He lit it with the Connie's dashboard lighter. "Happy fucking days." "And if you want to sell it, what are we doing smoking it?" Polk went on, not much mollified by the thought of God providing. "So we sell a few short ounces. Come on, Polk, have a smoke." This never failed to break Polk up. He brayed laughter and took the joint. Between them, standing on its wire stock, was the Schmeisser fully loaded. The Connie blazed on up the road, its gas gauge standing at an eighth. Polk and Lloyd had met a year before in the Brownsville Minimum Security Station, a Nevada work farm. Brownsville was 90 acres of irrigated farmland and a prison compound of Quonset huts about 60 miles north of Tonopah and about 80 northeast of Gabs. It was a mean place to do short time. Although Brownsville Station was supposed to be a farm, nothing much grew there. Carrots and lettuce and peas got one taste of that blaring sun, chuckled weakly, and died. Legumes and weeds would grow, and the state legislature was frantically dedicated to the idea that someday soybeans would grow. But the kindest thing that could be said about Brownsville's ostensible purpose was that the desert was taking a Christless long time to bloom. The warden, who preferred to be called the boss, prided himself on being a hard-ass, and he hired only men he considered to be fellow hard-asses. And, as he was fond of telling the new fish, Brownsville was mostly minimum security because there was no place to run to if you went under the wire. Some did, but most were brought back in 2 or 3 days, sunburned, glare-blind, and eager to sell the boss their shriveled raisin souls for a drink of water. Some of them cackled madly, and one young man, who was out for 3 days, claimed he saw a large castle some miles south of Gabs, a castle with a moat. The moat, he said, was guarded by trolls riding big black horses. Some months later, when a Colorado revival preacher did a show at Brownsville, this same young man got Jesus in a big way. Andrew Polk Freeman, in for simple assault, was released in April of 1980. He had occupied a bed next to Lloyd Henried, and had told him that if Lloyd was interested in a big score, he knew about something interesting in Vegas. Lloyd was willing. Lloyd was released on June 1st. His crime, committed in Reno, had been attempted rape. The lady was a showgirl on her way home, and she had shot a load of tear gas into Lloyd's eyes. He felt lucky to get only 2 to 4, plus time served, plus time off for good behavior. At Brownsville, it was just too fucking hot to misbehave. He caught a bus to Las Vegas, and Polk met him at the terminal. "This is the deal," Polk told him. He knew this fellow, one-time business associate, might describe him best, and this guy was known in certain circles as Gorgeous George. He did some piecework for a group of people with mostly Italian and Sicilian names. George was strictly part-time help. What he did mostly for these Sicilian-type people was to take things and bring things. Sometimes he took things from Vegas to L.A. Sometimes he brought other things back from L.A. to Vegas. Small-time dope, mostly, freebies for big-time customers. Sometimes guns. The guns were always a bring, never a take. As Polk understood it, and Polk's understanding never got much beyond what the movie people call soft focus, these Sicilian-type people sometimes sold iron to independent thieves. Well, Polk said, Gorgeous George was willing to tell them the time and place when a fairly good haul of these items were in stock. George was asking 25% of what they realized. Polk and Lloyd would crash in on George, tie him and gag him, take the stuff, and maybe give him a couple of biffs and baffs for good measure. It had to look good, George had cautioned, because these Sicilian-type people were no one to fool around with. Yeah, Lloyd said. That sounds good. The next day, Polk and Lloyd went to see Gorgeous George, a mild-mannered six-footer with a small head which sat incongruously above his roof-beam shoulders. He had a full head of waved blonde hair, which made him look a bit like the famed wrestler. He had had second thoughts about the deal, but Polk had changed his mind again. Polk was good at that. George told them to come around to his house the following Friday evening around 6. Wear masks, for God's sake, he said. And you bloody my nose and black my eye, too. Jesus, I wish I'd never gotten into this. The big night came. Polk and Lloyd took a bus to the corner of George's street and put on ski masks at the foot of his walk. The door was locked, but as George had promised, not too tightly locked. There was a rumpus room downstairs, and there was George standing in front of a hefty bag full of pot. The ping-pong table was loaded down with guns. George was scared. Jesus, oh Jesus, I wish I'd never gotten into this, he kept saying as Lloyd tied his feet with clothes rope and Polk bound his hands with Scotch brand filament tape. Then Lloyd biffed George in the nose, blooding it, and Polk baffed him in the eye, blacking it as per request. Jeez, George cried, did you have to do it so hard? Polk plastered a piece of adhesive tape across George's mouth. The two of them had begun to gather up the swag. You know something, old buddy? Polk said, pausing. Nope, Lloyd said, giggling nervously. Not a thing. I wonder if old George there can keep a secret. Lloyd stared thoughtfully at Gorgeous George for a long, hard minute. George's eyes bugged back at him in sudden terror. Then Lloyd said, Sure, it's his ass, too. But he sounded as uneasy as he felt. Polk smiled. Oh, he could just say, Hey, guys, I met this old friend and his buddy. We shot the shit for a while, had a few beers, and what do you think? The sons of bitches came over to the house and ripped me off. Sure hope you catch 'em. Here's what they look like. George was shaking his head wildly, his eyes capital O's of terror. The guns were in a heavy canvas laundry sack they had found in the downstairs bathroom. Now Lloyd hefted the bag nervously and said, Well, what do you think we ought to do? I think we ought to pokerize him, old buddy, Polk said regretfully. Only thing we can do. Lloyd said, That seems awful hard after he put us onto this. Hard world, old buddy. Yeah, Lloyd sighed, and they walked over to George. Oof, George said, shaking his head wildly. Oof, oof, oof. I know, Polk soothed him. Bitch, ain't it? I'm sorry, George, no shit. Catch on his head, Lloyd. That was easier said than done. Gorgeous George was whipping his head wildly from side to side. He was sitting in the corner of his rumpus room, and the walls were cinder block, and he kept rapping his head against them. Didn't even seem to feel it. Catch him, Polk said serenely, and ripped another piece of tape from the roll. Lloyd at last got him by the hair and managed to hold him still long enough for Polk to slap the second strip of adhesive neatly across George's nose, thereby sealing all his tubes. George went purely crazy. It went on for almost 5 minutes before George was completely still. He bucked and scrabbled and thumped. His face got as red as the side of old Dad's barn. The last thing he did was to lift both legs 8 or 10 inches straight up off the floor and bring them down with a crash. It reminded Lloyd of something he had seen in a Bugs Bunny cartoon or something, and he chuckled a little, feeling a bit cheered up. Up until then, it had been sort of gruesome to see. Polk squatted beside George and felt for his pulse. Well, Lloyd said. Nothing ticking but his watch, old buddy, Polk said. Speaking of which. He lifted George's meaty arm and looked at his wrist. Nah, just a Timex. He let George's arm drop, shattering the crystal. George's car keys were in his front pants pocket, and in an upstairs cupboard they found a Skippy peanut butter jar half-filled with dimes, and they took those too. There was $20.60 in dimes. George's car was a wheezy old Mustang with bald tires. They left Vegas on U.S. 93 and went southeast into Arizona. By noon of the next day, day before yesterday, they had skirted Phoenix on the back roads. Yesterday, around 9, they had stopped at a dusty old general store 2 miles beyond Sheldon on Arizona Highway 75. They knocked over the store and pokerized the proprietor, an elderly gentleman with mail-order false teeth. They got $63 and the old man's pickup truck. The pickup truck had blown 2 tires this morning. They had crossed the state line from Arizona into New Mexico earlier on, and they stood by the truck, not sure what to do next. Along had come the White Continental and solved all their problems. The driver pulled over, leaned out, and said, Need any help? Sure do, Polk had said, and pokerized the guy right on the spot. Got him dead bang between the eyes with the .357 mag. Poor sucker probably never even knew what had hit him. Why don't you turn here, Lloyd said, pointing to the junction coming up. He was pleasantly stoned. Sure could, Polk said cheerfully. He let the Connie's speed drop from 80 to 60, drifted it to the left, right wheels barely leaving the ground, and then a new piece of road was unrolling in front of them. Route 78, due west. And so, not knowing they had ever left it, or that they were now the perpetrators of what the newspapers were calling a tri-state kill spree, they re-entered Arizona. About an hour later, a sign came up on their right. Burrack 6. Burlap, Lloyd said foggily. Burrack, Polk said, and began twisting the Connie's wheel so that the car made big, graceful loops back and forth across the road. Whoop, whoop. You want to stop there? I'm hungry, man. You always hungry. Fuck you, when I get stoned, I get the munchies. You can munch my 9-inch hog leg, how's that? Whoop, whoop. Seriously, Polk, let's stop. Okay, gotta get some cash, too. We've thrown off enough fucking pursuit. We gotta get some money and shag ass north. This desert shit makes no sense to me. Okay, Lloyd said. He didn't know if it was the dope working on him or what, but all of a sudden he felt paranoid as hell, even worse than when they'd been on the turnpike. Polk was right. Stop outside this barrack and pull a score like they had outside of Sheldon. Get some money and some gas station maps. Ditch this fucking Connie for something that would blend into the scenery, then get going north and east by the secondary roads. Get the fuck out of Arizona. I'll tell you the truth, man. All of a sudden, I feel as nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. I know what you mean, Jelly Bean, Lloyd said gravely, and then it hit them both funny, and they broke up. Burak was a wide place in the road. They shot through it, and on the other side was a combination cafe, store, and gas station. There was an old Ford wagon and a dust-streaked Olds with a horse trailer behind it in the dirt parking lot. The horse stared out at them as Polk wheeled the Connie in. This looks like just the ticket, Lloyd said. Polk agreed. He reached into the back for the 357 and checked the loads. You ready? I guess so, Lloyd said, and took hold of the Schmeisser. They walked across the baked parking lot. The police had known who they were for 4 days now. They had left their fingerprints all over Gorgeous George's house, and in the store where the old man with the mail-order dentures had been pokerized. The old man's pickup had been found within 50 feet of the bodies of the three people who belonged with the Continental, and it seemed reasonable to assume that the men who had killed Gorgeous George and the store owner had also killed these three. If they had been listening to the Connie's radio instead of the tape player, they would have known that Arizona and New Mexico police were coordinating the largest manhunt in 40 years, all for a couple of small-time grifters who could not quite comprehend what they might have done to start such a fuss. The gas station was self-service. The clerk had to turn on the pump. So they went up the steps and inside. Three aisles of canned goods went up the room toward the counter. At the counter, a man in cowboy clothes was paying for a pack of smokes and half a dozen Slim Jims. Halfway down the middle aisle, a tired-looking woman with coarse black hair was trying to decide over two brands of spaghetti sauce. The place smelled of stale licorice and sun and tobacco and age. The proprietor was a freckled man in a gray shirt. He was wearing a company cap that said Shell in red letters against a white field. He looked up as the screen door slapped shut, and his eyes widened. Lloyd put the wire stock of the Schmeisser against his shoulder and fired a burst at the ceiling. The two hanging light bulbs shattered like bombs. The man in the cowboy clothes began to turn around.
"Just hold still and nobody'll get hurt," Lloyd shouted.
At which point, Polk made him a liar by blowing a hole through the woman looking at the sauces. She flew out of her shoes.
"Holy gee, Polk!" Lloyd hollered. "You didn't have to pokerize her, old buddy," Polk yelled. "She'll never watch Lawrence Welk again. Whoop, whoop!"
The man in the cowboy clothes kept turning. He was holding his smokes in his left hand. The harsh light falling through the show window and the screen door pricked out bright stars in the dark lenses of his sunglasses. There was a .45 revolver tucked into his belt, and now he plucked it out unhurriedly as Lloyd and Polk were staring at the dead woman. He aimed, fired, and the left side of Polk's face suddenly disappeared in a spray of blood and tissue and teeth.
"Shot!"
Polk screamed, dropping the .357 and pinwheeling backward. His flailing hands raked potato chips and taco chips and cheese doodles onto the splintery wooden floor.
"Shot me, Lloyd! Look out! Shot me! Shot me!"
He hit the screen door and banged back through it and sat down hard on the porch outside, pulling one of the aged door hinges loose. Lloyd, stunned, fired more in reflex than in self-defense. The Schmeisser's roar filled the room. Cans flew. Bottles crashed, spilling catsup, pickles, olives. The glass front of the Pepsi cooler jingled inward. Bottles of Dr. Pepper and knee-high and orange crush exploded like clay pigeons. Foam ran everywhere. The man in the cowboy clothes, cool, calm, and collected, fired his piece again. Lloyd felt rather than heard the bullet as it droned by, nearly close enough to part hair. He raked the Schmeisser across the room from left to right. The man in the shell cap dropped behind the counter with such suddenness that an observer might have thought a trap door had been sprung on him. A gumball machine disintegrated. Red, blue, and green chews rolled everywhere. The glass bottles on the counter exploded. One of them had contained pickled eggs, and immediately the room was filled with the sharp odor of vinegar. The Schmeisser put three bullet holes in the cowboy's khaki shirt, and most of his innards exited from the back to splatter a Budweiser sign that showed the world-famous Clydesdales. The cowboy went down, still clutching his .45 in one hand and his deck of luckies in the other. Lloyd, bullshit with fear, continued to fire. The machine pistol was growing hot in his hands. A box filled with returnable soda bottles tinkled and fell over. A calendar girl wearing hot pants took a bullet hole in one magical peach-colored thigh. A rack of paperbacks with no covers crashed over. Then the Schmeisser was empty, and the new silence was deafening. The smell of gunpowder was heavy and rank. "Holy gee," Lloyd said. He looked cautiously at the cowboy. It didn't look like the cowboy was going to be a problem.
"Shot me,"
Poke brayed, and staggered back inside. He clawed the screen door out of his way with such force that the other hinge popped and the screen fell off onto the porch.
"Shot me, Lloyd, look out!"
"I got him, Poke,"
Lloyd soothed, but Poke seemed not to hear. He was a mess. His right eye blazed like a baleful sapphire. The left was gone. His left cheek had been vaporized, and you could watch his jaw work on that side as he talked. Most of his teeth were gone over there, too. His shirt was soaked with blood.
"Stupid fuck blew me up,"
Poke screamed. He bent over and got the .357 mag.
"I'll teach you to shoot me, you numb fuck."
He advanced on the cowboy, a rural Dr. Sardonicus. He put one foot on the cowboy's butt like a hunter posing for a picture with his trophy and prepared to empty the .357 into his head. Lloyd stood watching, gape-mouthed, the smoking machine pistol dangling from one hand, still trying to figure out how all of this had happened. At that moment, the man in the shell cap popped back up from behind the counter, his face screwed up in an expression of desperate intent, a double-barreled shotgun clutched in both hands.
"Huh?"
Poke said, and looked up just in time to get both barrels. Lloyd decided it was time to leave. Fuck the money. There was money everywhere. He wheeled and exited the store in large, shambling strides, his boots barely touching the boards. He was halfway down the steps when an Arizona State Police cruiser wheeled into the yard. A trooper got out on the passenger side and pulled his pistol.
"Hold it right there. What's going on in there?"
"Three people dead,"
Lloyd cried.
"Hell of a mess. Guy that did it went out the back. I'm getting the fuck out."
He ran to the Connie and had actually slipped behind the wheel when the trooper yelled,
"Halt! Halt or I'll shoot!"
Lloyd halted. The keys weren't in the fucking thing anyway.
"Holy gee," Lloyd said miserably, as one of the troopers laid a big horse pistol upside his head.
The other one cuffed him. "In the back of the cruiser, sonny." The man in the shell cap had come out onto the porch, still clutching his shotgun.
"He shot Bill Markson,"
he yelled in a high, queer voice.
"T'other one shot Mrs. Storm. Hell of a note. I shot t'other one. He's dead on a shitbug. Like to shoot this one, too, if the new boys'll stand away."
"Calm down, Pop," one of the troopers said. "Fun's over."
"I'll shoot him where he stands," the old guy yelled. "I'll lay him low."
Then he leaned forward like an English butler making a bow and threw up on his shoes.
"You boys get me away from that guy, would you?" Lloyd said. "I think he's crazy."
"You got this coming out of the store, you hairbag," the other trooper said.
The barrel of his pistol looped up and up, catching the sun, and then it crashed down on Lloyd Henreid's head, and he never woke up until that evening in the Apache County Jail's infirmary.